Okay. This is Parshas Vayishlach, but it's really going to be a little bit of Vayetze and Vayishlach and Hanukkah. And the last 2,500 years. Now, we started speaking about the Mahos, but we haven't even touched on a Kabbalistic idea that is much bigger than what we spoke about last week. We spoke about the Imahos as the koach of the Isha in each of us, and those who've been here for a while know exactly what we're speaking about. There are many previous classes about this, that there is a component in every person called the Isha, the female, and a component in every person called the male, and they're not biological, they're psychological, philosophical components. And we spoke about the Isha is the capacity to know the difference, Bina. Bina is associated with Isha. Bain, to distinguish between two things, the rooster that distinguishes between night and day when it's pitch black outside, right? The ability to disentangle two things that look similar. We spoke about the idea that the Imahos, historically, and the Isha and every person is in charge of disentangling. Asara disentangled Yishmael from Yitzchak, and Rivka disentangled Esav from Yaakov, and Rachel and Leah disentangled from their father Lavan, and Yishmael, Esav, Yishmael, Esav, and Lavan all represent different things. Yishmael is associated with Zanus, physical gratification, sensory stimulation, physical pleasure that satisfies that constant, relentless need and yearning in a person, which we called what? What's the word for that? That yearning. Remember, we have a word for it. Where does it come from? Vayachulu, kolsa nafshi, keli, a vessel that needs to be filled. Every person has a constant, relentless experience of needing, something's missing, and we need satisfaction. And we feel it physically with hunger. We feel it emotionally with a sense of self-worth and validation. And we feel it spiritually. We're looking for meaning. We feel it on every level. We talked about the concept of Esav, that the easy, automatic, lazy, default mode is to fill that yearning, I'm sorry, Yishmael, with physical pleasure. Yishmael is associated with that. We talked about the natural tendency to fill that yearning with ego gratification. That's associated with Esav. We spoke about the idea of Lavan, that to take that yearning and squander it and use it on nothing, and then it's not available to us to really drive us to achieve what we're really yearning for, what our real satisfaction comes for, and the idea that we spoke about the idea of even imagining that one person is taking that drive and applying it in the correct direction of learning Torah and doing mitzvahs, but really that could also be, if we are become objective, just another kosher, polite, respectable way of satisfying, of feeding our desire for Taiva, physical pleasure, and Gaiva, ego, you know, ego stroking, but in the guise of very kosher, you know, type of form. So we spoke about all these things. So we talk about the Isha in the person is the quality that's responsible for disentangling, for distinguishing, and directing that yearning to what is it's really yearning for, which is, of course, our attachment to Hashem. Now we get into a Kabbalistic idea that you can't avoid when you start thinking about Rachel and Leah. I'm going to tell you what the Vilna Gaon says, and then we're going to see that he takes it straight from the Psukim. This is how the Vilna Gaon sees the Psukim. Let me just preface by saying the Vilna Gaon is probably one of the three smartest people that have ever lived in the last 500 years. It's scary. Now, this is what the Vilna Gaon says, okay? The Vilna Gaon says that we know, and this idea is fleshed out so perfectly and so beautifully, it's a masterpiece. In Recipse Chaim of Chaim Friedlander in Moadim Beis on Hanukkah, he goes through it step by step. It's really a masterpiece, this particular piece on Hanukkah. So he explains, the Vilna Gaon says that there are really two types of ways that Klal Yisrael are in an attachment with Hashem. One, and it's an Aramaic word, and it's a Kabbalistic idea. It's called Isarusa de Le'ela. Isarusa comes from the word you're familiar with from L'chadodi, Hisoruri, arouse and awaken and, you know, feel that, you know, the movement. Isarusa de Le'ela means that this dynamic of arousing the need in a person and driving it to the right direction is coming from above, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's also something called Isarusa Deletata, that this arousal and this yearning and this awakening and motivation comes from down here, grassroots, from below. That's us. Now, there are two basic tkufas in Jewish history. Okay? We sometimes think of Jewish history as divided into many different phases, but Chazal see it as two tkufas. There's the 1,000-year period or era of Nisim and Nevuah, and Hashem communicating with us and doing miracles for us and fighting our battles, like in Mitzrayim when we sat in our houses, the mezuzah, right, put the blood on the mezuzah, and the Egyptians all died outside. And Yeshua walked around the walls and they fell down. And he said, stop the sun, and it stopped. And they crossed the Yarden, right, in Eretz Yisrael, it split, just like the Yamsuf. And then the whole period of the first Beis HaMikdash, where there were open miracles in the Beis HaMikdash, Nevi'im could call upon a miracle at will and it will take place. And Hashem demonstrates concretely that He is Hashem, what His will is, Klal Yisrael's responsibility. It's very, you know, clear. It's made clear by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem interferes in history and in the affairs of man through Nevuah and Nisim on a regular basis. There's 1,000 years, and that's the first kufa of Jewish history, and it starts with the Avos and the Imahos, and it ends with the end of miracles, the end of Nisim, which is after Purim, okay? The second kufa of Jewish history is from the beginning of the Second Temple period till right now, till this second. Don't forget, the second Beis HaMikdash was very different than the first. Number one, Malchus, Jewish kings, they were not sovereign. They were under various governments, starting right from the beginning. First the Persians, then eventually the Greeks and the Romans. Now, eventually, they had a few years in between by the Hanukkah revolt where they had autonomy, but that was quick. That was very short-lived, and eventually the Romans came in between the Greeks and the Roman period. They did not have the Nisim in the second Beis HaMikdash. There was no Aron. There was no Aron in the second Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen did not have an Urim V'Tumim behind the Choshen, the parchment that had Hashem's name that caused the Choshen to light up so that Hashem could communicate to Klal Yisrael that way. There were no Nisim. There were no open Nisim, except for the Chanukah Nes in the whole of the Second Temple era. So you might actually say that the Second Beis HaMikdash was more like a glorified shul, where the emphasis was the avoda of the people. We lit the menorah, we put the bread on the shulchan, we lit the golden mizbeach for Ketores, we gave karbanos on the outside mizbeach. We did it, the Levium sang, but Hashem did not bestow upon us prophecy or miracles. And this tkufa led directly into where we are now, and Chazal see it as one tkufa. Now, so we said there's clearly, the first tkufa is going to be called Isarusa de Le'ela, where the arousal comes from Hashem. Hashem is the one kind of conveying to the world this spiritual, energy that's clearly bestowed upon us and beyond us. And the second Beis HaMikdash till today, where there's no Nisim and there's no Nevuah openly, that demands that we, like in the second Beis HaMikdash, do it. We are the source of whatever Kavod Shemayim or awareness of Hashem there's going to be. Notice the difference between the mezuzah, which you put on the right side of your house, on the door, and the menorah, which you put on the left side. The mezuzah represents the first kufa, Isarusa de Le'ela. And the menorah, which is Chashmonayim, we fought, we took losses, we sacrificed for what we knew to be true. And Hashem was quiet, so to speak, behind the scenes, letting us do it, despite the losses. That's the menorah on the other side of the doorpost, of the gate, so to speak, that tells us that we're entering to the second kufa of Jewish history. Now, the question is, which one is the preferred kufa? You might say, clearly it's the first one, Isarusa de Le'ela, where the Jewish people have prophecy and they have miracles. And they're in Eretz Yisrael, and they have the Beis HaMikdash. That's obviously the preferred one, because that, what does preferred mean? It accomplishes its goal. That brings the world to a recognition of Hashem, submission to the will of Hashem, and a dawning on the consciousness of all humanity of the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's revelation. So that's clearly the preferred one. There's only one problem. It didn't work. All of that never worked. The Jewish people lost the Beis HaMikdash because they were sinning. They lost Eretz Yisrael. No nation in the world came closer to an awareness of Hashem. So for 1,000 years, that's kufa, Isarusa de Le'ela, didn't accomplish its purpose. if that was its purpose, right? But the second kufa, which is where it comes from us, and we take upon ourselves to be the source of Kavod Shemayim, that kufa, Chazal say, is the preferred tkufa. That's the tkufa also called Torah Shebaal Peh. That starts, the Torah Shebaal Peh begins in the second Beis HaMikdash. Chanukah is a mitzvah de Rabbanan. Also, what's very important, which we're going to talk about soon, is that Rabbanim start putting on siyogim, fences, muksa, so you don't violate Shabbos, yichud, so you don't end up having an adulterous, you know, forbidden affair, bishul akum, so your food remains kosher, basar shenesalim and ayin, which we'll talk about because a lot of people don't know about that, that you can, if you have meat, by the way, in your house, and you leave your house and the meat is unwrapped, or you have a housekeeper prepare it, you're not allowed to do that. Your meat has to be wrapped. And if you let someone, if you're not home and a non-Jew deals with the meat, it must have a siman on it. If it's already cooked, you seal it and you tape it, or you seal it and you put a siman on it, then you could leave it in the house with a non-Jew. But there's a gezeira from Chachamim called Basar Shenis Alim and Ha'ayim. Now, the point is we're going to discuss the siyogim that start to be developed in this time of Torah Shebaal Peh. Chazal, the Vilna Gaon explains that the first kufa is Arusa de la'ela, where everything comes from Hashem, is bestowed upon Klal Yisrael, and yet is not the preferred kufa, and doesn't achieve its purpose of bringing the hearts of all humanity into close connection to Hashem. That's called Leah. And the second kufa, that is the one of Arusa de la'tata, where the arousal comes from down here, from us, and we, that's Torah Shebaal Peh, and fighting our battles and taking losses, and we're the source of Kavod Shemayim, that's the Iker, and that's called Rachel. Now, why does he say this? First of all, here is a pasuk to prove this point. In Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi are the last Nevi'im. They're the end of Nevuah. Okay, Malachi is Ezra, according to many. Now, in Chagai it says, Gadol Yiyeh Kavod Habayis Hazer. They're about to build the second Beis HaMikdash. It's the beginning of the second temple era. They're returning to Israel to build the second temple, which we said is part of this 2,500 year Golus, which is part of the second Kufa. Gadol Yiyeh Kavod Habayis Hazer Ha'acharon Min HaRishon. Greater will be the honor of this house, the second one, the later one, more than the first one. Okay? The Chazal explain there, okay, Gemara says, that's Chazal and the Gemara explain, that we're talking about the second kufa is going to bring more kavod than the first. Now listen to this and think about a Rashi in Vayetze, and you should strike your memory here. Ikar HaTorah, the essence, the Ikar, okay, the preferred, the essential Torah, V'ziva V'hadara, and her splendor and her glory, Lohaya Ella Babayasheni. The glory of Torah was in Bayasheni. Don't forget, Bayasheni didn't even have an Aron. It didn't have any Nisim, as we said. It didn't have Nevuah. It was nothing like the first base of English. But Chazal say the Iker of its glory and its splendor. And the words here, come on, you know these words, Ziva Vahadara. Right? They should jog a piece in your memory here. The Iker, Ziv, and Hadar, glory and splendor of the Torah is in the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, we know in the Rachel Leah story, because Masa Ava Simin Labanim, who was Yaakov given first? Leah. But who did he prefer? Rachel. Okay. This is clear. Number one, Leah is going to represent the era, the Tkufa of Jewish history, that is bestowed upon us first. Does Yaakov choose Leah, or is she kind of put upon him against his will? Does she bring him Malchus, Kahuna, and Leviah? Yes. And all those three are Hashem's bestowing them upon us. The Melech is chosen by Hashem. It is not from the people. Not like a Chacham, which is chosen from the people. Okay? Kahuna and Leviah, who chooses the Kohen, comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they bestow the bracha on the people. Leviim are chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the second Beis HaMikdash, the Sanhedrin and the Chachamim arise from the people. They're chosen by their Rebbe to convey smicha on a chosen Talmud, because they're worthy, not because of some prophecy, or they're not anointed by God. Right? You see this? So, although Leah is given to Yaakov, without his asking for it, and given to Yaakov first, and bestows upon Yaakov and Klal Yisrael Malchus, Kohuna, and Leviah, monarchy, being Kohanim, Leviim, that's not the preferred mode. Now watch this. This is what Heshy pointed out. It's unbelievable. And you should all call him up and say thank you, because it's a real unbelievable insight. Based on this idea, is this idea clear so far?
Yes.
Okay. If you look in Perikov Tess, look at all of Leah's children's names versus Rachel's children's names. Okay? Perikov Tess 29. Every one of her names represents Isarusa de Ela that Hashem bestows upon her. You know, Hashem bestows upon her that it comes from Hashem. It's a gift to her. Hashem is taking care of her. Hashem is giving her what she needs. And there's no word that she's asking anything of Hashem, and Hashem is responding. In Isarusa de Le'ela, Hashem initiates the first base of Megdash, Nevi'im, Nevuah, Nisim. Hashem is giving it to us whether we're Ra'oi or not, really. And in the second base of Megdash, we ask, we call out. We need, know what we need. We ask Hashem to respond to us. But not in the first time. The first time it's really a concept of a one-way street. Look at how she names her children. Every single one is as if she has a situation and Hashem sees it and provides for her. He understands the situation and he takes care of her needs. Chapter 29. So the first one is, in Pasuk 32, Lamed Beis, she called her son Reuven because she said, Ra'a Hashem ba'anyi. Hashem saw my affliction. Okay? Next, she has another child, and she says, Kishama Hashem, Kisnua Anochi. Hashem heard that I am hated. Hashem heard. It doesn't say anything about her saying Hashem responded to my prayer. Now, I just want to point something out very important. She says, Kisnua Anochi. The tkufa of Leah, how do you call that snua, hated? How do you call a Leah hated? Do you think Yaakov, who was considered the greatest of all the avos, treated his wife with disrespect or made her feel better or disregarded her? So my grandfather pointed this out. If you have two things that you love very much, but you prefer one a tiny bit more, the other one feels hated. Just say to your child, I love you desperately. I just love your sister a little more. I prefer to spend time with her a little bit more. That's called hated, okay? You hear? In Torah Lashon. Now, so she says, Hashem heard that I'm not preferred, right? The next one, she says, Hapam Yalava Ishi. This time that Hashem gave me a third child, now my husband might accompany me. Hashem saw that he's not really connected to me, right? The third one, Hapam Oda Es Hashem, I just thank Hashem for everything he's given me. Then Rachel goes and says, give me children, gives Yaakov Bilha. Okay, look what happens. Bilha has a child. What does Rachel call him in Pasuk 6 of Perek 30? Danani Elokim v'gam shama b'koli v'yitein li ben. He heard me and he responded and he judged me to be worthy and he gave me a child. It's totally different. Right. She said, I asked for something and Hashem responded to me and he judged me to be worthy. Okay, totally different. Then the next one, next child, she calls him Naftule. Naftalti im achosi gam yecholti v'tikwa shmo. She said, I struggled and I battled with my sister. I fought for my rights and I was victorious, right? In other words, she says, I'm putting in effort. Now, then what happens? Leah goes and gives Zilpah to Yaakov, right? Now, what does she call those children? God and Usher, right? What is Ba God? Ba Mazal Tov. Good fortune has befallen me. It's amazing, right? The next one, Usher. Ashruni, I'm fortunate. I've been the recipient of good fortune, right? Then what happens when Yosef is born? I'm sorry, there's Yisachar and Zvulun. There's two more, right? Nasan Elokim Sechari. Right? Hashem gave me a reward. It's unbelievable, right? Then she says, Zavadani Elokim Zeved Tov. Hashem gave me a good chelek. Then comes Yosef. What does she call him? She asks, Yosef Hashem li ben acher. Give me another one. Then she says, Asaf Elokim es cherpasi. I had a feeling of, you know, of secondary status and Hashem, and it bothered me and Hashem took it away. And now give me another one. She asks. You never see that by Leah. And then Binyamin, she calls it Ben Oni. Everything she does represents her struggle, and that Hashem saw how much she was working and it was coming from her, and Hashem responded to her. It's an amazing. So the Vilna Gaon is taking the idea, these Kabbalistic ideas that he's explaining, that this Arusa de La'ela is Leah, and this Arusa de La Tata is Rachel, because it's straight in the Psukim. It's straight in the Psukim. Now Rachel gives birth to Yosef. Yosef is not, he's the first one who's not a Navi. He's among the 48 Naviim that are listed. He is not listed. In fact, he's not a Navi. What is he? What does Paro call him? Ein Chacham v'Navon Kamocha. You're a Chacham. The Tkufa of Rachel, the second Beis HaMikdash till today, is the Tkufa of the Chachamim. We, through the 13 Midos, that are the scientific methods that you're allowed to analyze the Mishnah, the sages of the Gemara, come up with applications, a new, you know, to fit the new situations. Chachamim. Now Chazal tell us, Chacham Adif Minavi. A Chacham is preferred to a Navi. Chacham, you heard that, right? Chacham Adif Minavi, which means that if the Chazal, if Sanhedrin are discussing a halacha, and they're using the 13 scientific methods, which are called Shlosha Esrei Midos HaTorah Nedreshes Bahem, the 13 ways you're allowed to analyze Torah, they're rules. It has a science all of its own, right? And the Navi says, well, all your conversations back and forth and your rational arguments and you're concluding that the halacha is like this and you're taking a majority vote, you're wasting your time because I heard in a bas kol that the halacha is like this. What do they say to him? Go home. We don't care. It's not how halacha is set up anymore. We say, halacha, Torah, lo, bashamayim hi. That's what we mean. Torah in the second tkufa is for us to figure out, for us to decide, for us to initiate, and that becomes the halacha. It's coming from here. It's called the Sarusa de Latata. It's preferred. It's the Ziva Vahadara of Torah, the glory and the splendor of Torah. It's the preferred Rachel Tkufa of Jewish history. But now we get to something else. Rachel and Leah are the two tkufas of and the two ways of acquiring Torah. Who's obviously the mushal for Torah? Is Yaakov. When Yaakov leaves Yitzchak in the very beginning of Vayetze, you know that Rashi, that's what I was telling you. It's going to jog your memory. Vayetze Yaakov mi be'er Sheva. Right? Look what it says. Yaakov is going to be, ultimately, all his children are Klal Yisrael. His wives are Leah and Rachel. Yaakov is Emes. Titin Emes Le Yaakov. Torah is Emes. Yaakov is a metaphor for Torah, for pure Torah, right? Look what it says about Vayetze Rashi. Lama Yehizkir Yitziyasa. Why does it tell us that he left? We know he's going somewhere, so obviously he left. Ella, to teach you. She Yitziyas Tzadik Min Hamakom. When a Tzadik comes out of a place, so these are this is a Kabbalistic idea which we're going to talk about in a second. When a Tzadik leaves, goes out of a Makom, of a place, Osa Roshem, it makes an impression. Shebizman Shahat Tzadik Ba'ir, that any time the righteous person is in the city, now look at these words, Hu Hoda, Hu Ziva, Hu Hadara. He is the Hod, he is the Ziv, he is the Hadar, the glory and the splendor and the beauty. Yatza Mishami goes out of there, Pana Hoda, Pana Ziva, Pana Hadara. All of that is lost, it goes away. Okay, now, that's what they said. They said the second Beis HaMikdash is Hoda, V'ziva, V'hadara. Now, the idea that we started talking about last week, which is that everybody has a relentless yearning, Vayachulu, Keli, everything is a vessel that needs to be filled, right? Kolsa Nafshi, my heart is pining away. Akala, we said the David HaMelech in Tehillim Pei Dalet says, Kolsa Nafshi, Nichsefa Nafshi, we said Kesef. Kesef is currency. That drive and yearning and need for fulfillment and satisfaction that churns away at every person relentlessly is kesef. It's currency. You can do something with it. It could drive you in the right direction. It's what you need to force you, to make you want to achieve what you're really striving for, right? Now, where does that come from? Let's go back even further. Where does that yearning come from? We know Vayechulu, but where... what's the mechanism that brought that about? So it's a Kabbalistic idea that you might have heard about. And I'm not in any way educated in Kabbalah, but some of these ideas have been explained rationally in the regular philosophical sfarim. So we're just going to touch on a word you might have heard without even beginning to imagine that we understand it at all in its real deepest sense. But the concept is that, of course, if Hashem is everything, and Hashem is complete, and Hashem is perfect, and Hashem pervades all everything that exists. So how is it possible that we perceive that there's a world that's separate from Hashem? So the Mekubalim deal with a concept called Tzimtzum. You heard about this? Okay. Without going into Tzimtzum, because I don't know what it is, it's basically this. The idea is, and now you're going to remember that famous, famous analogy, I hope will come to your mind in a moment, that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Shechina, or truth, or Or, light, or Ein Sof, infiniteness, pervaded this world, it was withdrawn. But when it's withdrawn, it leaves an imprint, it leaves an impression of where it was. And that impression now feels the loss. And it's yearning for what it lost. And therefore, it's always yearning for only that, but it's so easy to fill that hunger with everything else, with the default, you know, sensory stimulation and ego, all the other things we talked about, right? But that's what we're looking for, is what left, and it was the hadar, the ziva, the hod, the beauty, the splendor, the perfection. It left the makom, the city, the place. It left a roshem. What do you mean it left an impression? Everybody feels the loss. And that's what we're trying to recapture. That's the mashal of Yaakov leaving the city, Vayetze Yaakov. And now we feel that emptiness. It left an impression, and we're trying to recapture it. There are two ways that we bond back, so to speak, with Yaakov, the Leah way and the Rachel way. The Leah way is the first way, where Hashem bestows upon us again, one more time, that beauty and that splendor and the Nisim and the prophecy. But there's a problem. The problem is that we don't appreciate it this time, because it's given to us before we've deeply felt the yearning for it. If you try to feed someone who's not hungry, they don't want to eat. So what has to happen is there has to be a development of that sense that we want it, and then we seek it, and then it's restored to us. So it actually goes Leah, Rachel, Leah. How do you see that? The first kufa of Jewish history is in Eretz Yisrael, Malchus, Kahuna, Leviah, right? Then, starting with the second Beis HaMikdash, it's that Leah's role, her children's role of leadership, what comes from Leah, is relinquished to Rachel. Once you have the Gullus, you should notice this, that Leah's children always govern Klal Yisrael and lead Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. Malchus Beis David, Kohanim, Leviim. But it's Rachel's children, Yosef and Mitzrayim, and Binyamin, Esther and Mordechai come from Binyamin, Yeshua and Nun from Ephraim, Ben Nun from Ephraim. Anytime there's a establishment of the truth of Judaism among the Goyim, that comes from Rachel. It's always B'nai Rachel. And in the future, the one that fights Amalek, Esav, brings Klal Yisrael back, it's always B'nai Rachel. It's always going to be from that line. Now, so we go through the tekufa of Rachel. We go through the Gullus tekufa. Rachel's children ensure that we maintain our connection to Torah through the tekufa of Gullus, and that's actually the preferred tekufa, and all the Kavod Shemayim comes from us, and there's the Chachamim, and there's Torah Shebal Peh. But in the end, Rachel mevaka al baneha, what does she really want? What is this whole tekufa really yearning for? To return to Eretz Yisrael. And with that return, what do we get back again? Leah, the Melucha and the Kohuna and the Leviim Beis Hamikdash. But this time, it's because we know what we want and we worked for it and we yearn for it, and then it's given back to us because we want it. And that's why, by the way, he marries Leah first. Rachel's the Iker wife. Rachel dies on the Derech. And then he goes back to Eretz Yisrael and gets buried with Leah. You see that? Now, the Chachamim understood this. And they started creating siyogim, fences, for mitzvahs in the second Beis HaMikdash. So this is an amazing book. The Juggler and the King by Rav Aaron Feldman. This, he was from Or Samech, and now Neri Yisrael. And this, like, catapulted him into fame. And this is more like a sefer than a book. He explains very bizarre, I mentioned this already once, weird mashalim and riddles and things that are all meant to teach deep lessons, and he explains them. So the Gemaras are in the back and the explanations in the front, and you can really learn this. So here's an example of exactly what we're speaking about. So there was the elders of Athens. It seems that Rabbi Yeshua, from the time, you know, of the Gemara, would travel to Athens, and And they had kind of debates with the elders of Athens, which was the Roman influence. And the elders of Athens asked him this question. If someone loaned money and then had to seize the borrower's property when he defaulted on his loan, why would he give him a further loan? Okay. What were they asking? If Hashem gave Klal Yisrael the Torah, the first Beis HaMikdash, and they didn't succeed in fulfilling it, why would you come and give them more mitzvahs? More fences? More, right there, you do, like we said, muksa, so you shouldn't violate Shabbos, and yichud, so you shouldn't end up in a forbidden relationship. And all the, and there's numerous siyogim, siyogim on everything. Bishalachim we mentioned is one of them. Why would you give more mitzvahs if they didn't keep the first mitzvahs? What's going on here? So he answered them, you don't understand the concept of why the Rabbanim made siyogim. So he explained the following, and he uses a mashal to explain it. He says, if a man went to the pond to cut a bundle of reeds, it was too heavy for him to lift. So he cut more reeds and laid the new bundle on top of the first one, and then someone came along and helped him lift all of them. Okay. So what he's saying is this, what Yeshua is explaining to them, the reason that Chachamim made these siyogim is specifically because this. The Jews never, I'm going to read his words, the Jews never willfully rejected the Torah. They sinned because there were too many temptations enticing them to violate its laws. Right? We're talking about the first tkufa, when they lost the Beis HaMikdash. Deep in their hearts, they loved Torah, as much as when God originally asked them if they agreed to receive it, when in their recognition at that time of its vital worth, they responded with Nasa v'nishma. The rabbinic enactments are a demonstration of this love and how much the Jews truly do desire to carry out God's words. They are an expression of a fervent, these rabbinic enactments are an expression of a fervent hope that by adding these restrictions, they will keep away from the temptations that cause them to disobey the commandments and thereby fulfill their original obligations faithfully. The destruction of the temple and the dispersion was not God calling in his loan to the Jewish people. It was merely God's way of admonishing them to make greater efforts to keep the Torah. The rabbinic enactments represents one form of these efforts. When the nation repents fully and again begins observing the Torah properly, then the temple and the land will be returned to them. Why would the lender want to add another loan? To give the borrower a chance to pay back both of them. You hear this? This is the riddles. He says the first bundle of reeds is like the Torah the first time. It's too much. But then when you put more on, these are the rabbinic enactments, everybody sees that it's a group effort and comes to help and explains that a little more. We won't go into it. But the point is that the siyogim that the Rabbanim put on now after the end of Nisim and Avor to show that Klal Yisrael do want to do the work and they want to set up a situation that helps them, strategies that help them make sure that they don't sin again the way they did the first time. So again, this is Isarusa de la Tata. It's coming from the bottom. So you see? So far? Now, in Tehillim. All right? Everybody be singing this on Yom Tov when it falls on a weekday. Tehillim Chaf Dalet. And this Tehillim, right, we did this in Tehillim class this Wednesday morning. We have a little Tehillim Chabura Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock at Rina Fuchs's house. Anybody would like to be interested in joining it. It's more interactive, and it's we're learning Tehillim, and it really is devoted to kind of helping Tzili Schneider, remember the Kesher Yehudi organization that we have been involved with here. So the group learns, and we are all committed to helping her to further her good efforts. In fact, we're having a meeting to come up with a great fundraising plan. We have a good idea already in an event that hopefully you'll all participate in somewhere in the spring that can help raise a little funds for her. But in any case, in our Tehillim class, we talked about this. Tehillim Kaf Dalet, 24, notice that number. This Tehillim was composed by David HaMelech when he brought the Aron, okay, back to not yet Yerushalayim, back to the Ohel. There was a long period in the time of before the first Beis HaMikdash was built, where the Aron that had the Luchos in it was not in the same place as the tent that had where they offered the Karbanos. Okay, so then at one point the Aron was in somebody's house actually, and David brought it back. He composed this Tehillim when he brought back the Aron. Then, when he bought the land that he would eventually Shlomo would build the Beis HaMikdash on, this Tehillim was said. And then when Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash and tried to bring the Aron finally in the grand inauguration into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they said this Tehillim, and we're going to read a very interesting Rashi here. So the Tehillim, at the end of the Tehillim, it says, and you know already, you're beginning to see based on what we spoke about today, what's happening here. So he says, Su'u Sha'arim Roshechem. And the whole Tehillim is in this theme, but you can look at this Tehillim later. It's very interesting. Study it on Shabbos. You'll see a lot of what we're speaking about. But Su'u Sha'arim Roshechem, gates, the gates, lift up your heads. Remember we talked about putting a mezuzah and a menorah on your gates? By the way, the halach is on your gates. Mezuzos b'sharecha, right? It's on your gates. That's the way they did in Eretz Yisrael. And the menorah, the truth is, if you have a chatzar, you put it at the gate of the chatzar. So, Su'u Sha'arim Roshechem, lift up your heads in pride, you great gates, so to speak. What kind of gates? The Hinasu Pischei Olam, and the openings of the whole world will be lifted up. Vayavo Melech HaKavod, and who will come through? The King of Kavod. Mize Melech HaKavod, and he's asking a question. Who is the Melech HaKavod? Hashem Izuz V'Gibor, the powerful and mighty one. Hashem Gibor Milchama, the one who fights all the battles, like in Mitzrayim. That's Hashem the Gibor. He said it on the Yam. Hashem is Ish Milchama, fights our battles, right? Then he says it again. Su'u Sha'arim Roshechem, lift up your heads, you gates. Su'u Sha'arim Roshechem, Su'u Pischei Olam, and carry, lift up the openings of the whole world, Vayavo Melech HaKavod, and the King of Kavod will enter. Mi hu ze Melech HaKavod, who is the King, the glorious King? Hashem Tzivakos, hu Melech HaKavod Tzela, the King of the army is the Melech HaKavod. What is the army? What's the difference between calling a king Gibor Milchama versus calling a king the King of the army? One is the Gibor Milchama, who's doing the fighting? Hashem. The King. When it says Hashem is the king of the army, who's doing the fighting? The army. So what's happening in these two phrases? He's asking a question. Who's the Melech HaKavod? The Gibor Milchama or the king of the army, Klal Yisrael, the people doing Hashem's work, we're the legions, the ones picking up the swords and fighting the battles and establishing what the king stands for. Now the Rashi says something unbelievable here. What kapitel was this again? 24. Bimei Shlomo, in the days of Shlomo, the son of David, Kishabal lahachnas aron lebeis kodshei kodashim, when he came to bring the aron into the kodesh kodashim, v'davku sha'arim zubazu, the gates wouldn't open. What happened? Amar esrim v'arba rananos v'lo nena, he said 24 praises and songs and they wouldn't open. What is 24? It's a Tehillim 24, yes. But what else is 24? Huh? No. 24 Sifrei Tanakh. What is in this 24 Sifrei Tanakh? This is the era of Isarusa de La'ela. It's a 24 Sifrei Tanakh. Chumash Nevi'im Ksuvim, Nevua, Nisim, even Esther is included. She's the last of Tanakh, the last Nes included in Tanakh. And everything is from the 24 Sifrei Tanakh represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to us through the Nevi'im. The Sifrei Tanakh are all written b'nevuah. There's no such thing as a Sifrei Tanakh not written b'nevuah. The 24 Sifrei Tanakh means he spoke, he sang in the name of this entire Tkufa, okay? He spoke in the name of the concept of Isarusa de La'ela, 24 Zmiros, 20 Sifrei Tanakh, and it didn't open. So what then, when did the gates open? So then he said, Ad Sha'amar, Al Toshev Pnei Mashichecha, don't turn back the face of your Mashiach, Zachor Lechazdei David Avdecha, remember the chesed of David, your servant. And David is written Mali here, by the way, with a Vav and a Yud. Mashiach. In other words, what's he saying? The gates did not open for the 24 Sifrei Tanakh, for the Isarusa de La'ela. They are not really the way that the gates, the Pischei Olam, open and everyone comes to an awareness of Hashem. Because, that, as we said, it's not the preferred mode. Because when everything is bestowed upon us, then it doesn't really even necessarily affect us. We can lose it because the yearning is not coming from us. We're not the cause of it, and therefore we're not ensuring and we're not driven and we're not, it's not paramount to us. It's Hashem's business. But when we go through the entire tkufa of what we call Rachel, and we feel that that the need and the yearning, and we accept this role, and we're privileged to have this role, then we play this role, we do our job, eventually Mashiach brings us back to Eretz Yisrael, where we get what we originally had, but this time because we earned it, and because we want it, and then the gates opened. Okay? I just want to add one quick thing before we end. When the Hanukkah story took place, it's clear, okay, that everything was changing. They were in Eretz Yisrael, but they realized it was totally different. No more Issarusa del Eila. They can't sit in their houses and let Hashem fight their battles. If they were not going to fight the Misyavnim and the Syrian Greeks, they would lose. They'd lose their religion and they'd lose their country, lose everything. So they decided to fight, and the chips fall where they may, take the casualties, sacrifice. That was worth it. Chazal set up the days of Hanukkah. And if you read Al Hanisim, it says, they said, V'kavu Shemona Simei Hanukkah Elu Lahodos Ulahalel. Now, think about Hoda'ah. That's Leah, by the way. Hoda'ah means two things. Yehuda, right? Malchus Beis David, it's all. What does Hoda'ah mean? Modim, you bow, which means you accept, you submit, you acquiesce. And Hoda'ah means gratitude. You're grateful. So, Hoda'ah in this context of the Klal Yisrael, going into the Tkufa of Rachel now, because Hanukkah is the gateway to the whole Tkufa of Rachel. It's really the defining moment of how Chazal want us to see what's happening. They recognize that now the Issarusa is going to come from us, and it's going to take sacrifice, and it's going to take perseverance, and it's not necessarily going to be easy. And we're going to have to really, you know, commit to it, and there's going to be pain and suffering. They bowed to that new reality. They were modeh. More than being modeh, they gave hoda'ah. They thanked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the privilege to play this role, that any Kovet Shemayim that would come to the world from this point on is going to come only through Klal Yisrael. That's it. And they were modeh. Now, the hoda'ah, lahodosu lahalel, is not one-sided. There's also an aspect of hoda'ah from Hashem's side. As Hashem, so to speak, steps back, retreats, because he's giving Klal Yisrael the reins now, we also call that hoda'ah on the side of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because we have a halachic principle, which is applied to this. And it's a principle in Torah, and it's a principle in American law. And that is shtika kehoda'ah. Means that if you watch somebody do something, a crime, let's say, and you say nothing, and you don't protest, and you make no effort to stop it, you're guilty. You approve it. Or if you just see someone else running your business and you don't interfere, it means you're satisfied. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not, since the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, till today, openly break into history one more time, emergency measures, and reinstate the Issarusa de La'ela, but Hashem stayed back, silent, so to speak, but never gone. That's the sign of the Shemen that burned for 8 days. That Hashem is saying, I'm there, but I'm letting you do it. But make no mistake about it, I'm 100% there. It's just a different arrangement now. The fact that Hashem allows us to fight our battles, and we are the source of Kavod Shemayim, means, and Hashem doesn't interfere, it means, guess what? He's satisfied. It's not perfect. We haven't done, you know, we don't have a spotless record. But basically, Klal Yisrael are doing the job. And Hashem is agreeable to it. It's also quiet. Because Klal Yisrael are going through a process which will bring them back to Eretz Yisrael. And we are taking the bull by the horns. We take the achrayis, and look how Klal Yisrael has done. We have taken that achrayis. No matter what has been thrown upon us, we have not shirked that achrayis. It's an unbelievable thing. Some people have crumbled along the way. What about them? When Hashem puts the achrayis on us, it's not easy. Not everybody is the Klosenberger Rebbe that gets up 24 hours after liberation and he's starving to death and he's covered with lice and he has typhus and all his family's killed and he weighs 95 pounds and 24 hours later his yeshiva going as soon as they're liberated, because he gathers up anybody who he remembers, who he knows from the camps, who were Talmid Chachamim, and then he gathers all the little kids and he sits them down and starts teaching. And he had a kosher kitchen going right away as soon as they were liberated. He went into the kitchen. He said, take this big vat, put in water, just let it boil over, and then when you cook soup, don't put in meat, just vegetables and barley. And not everybody can manage to, right? What about everybody else? So to that, and there were many great people, along the way, but it wasn't everyone. Many people crumbled. So to that, we say the following nevuah, Uba'u ha'ovdim me'eretz Ashur v'hanidochen me'eretz Mitzrayim. The ovdim in Eretz Ashur, that's a symbol. Ashur represents like America, Bavel, Ashur, wealth. Any gullus where the opportunities were so vast and there was a temptation to succeed and to advance and it was easy to assimilate, and that's why people were lost. But there are other reasons why people are lost, and that's Hanidochin be'eretz Mitzrayim, may Eretz Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim represents those patches of gullus, those phases that were meitzar, tsaris, difficult, impossible, overwhelming, torture. And because of that, they were pushed away. Nidacha means they were pushed away. They were thrown away. So the Navi tells us in the end of days, when we all go back to Eretz Yisrael, when we finish this Tkufa of Rachel, don't worry about everybody. Ubohu ha'ovdim me'eretz Ashur. V'hanidachin me'eretz Mitzrayim. Everybody's going to find their way back. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands the pressures put upon us to play this role of Tkufas Rachel, right? And Rachel herself, in her four children, through her own and the Shvach and Bilhah, she screams about that, her efforts and her struggle and how she's trying and how it's over. And then she dies in the struggle, right? She dies in the struggle and was buried in along the way back to Eretz Yisrael. So that means that the effort is strong, overwhelming. We put it in, and it's all in the service of getting back to what we really had lechatchila, but we didn't appreciate. Chazal understood Hanukkah to be this, so they instituted modim. We bow to the new reality, which is going to be tough, but we also feel privileged to play this role. And Hashem is also quiet. Hashem also has a midah of hoda and says, "I trust you can do it. And I'll take care of you from behind the scenes while you do it. And don't worry, anyone lost along the way, I'll gather back in." How that will happen, these are also secrets that are in Hashem's hands, but this is a promise that Hashem makes. Okay. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Yeah, huge. We'll talk about it.
Leah. Will there be a miracle of Leah?